Well, here we are again, Ann and Peter Haig on the menu, and
you keep on changing the way you start the program. You'll get everybody confused.
Oh, well.
For years, it was always the same. Welcome,
Good
Diners
morning,
and Travelers.
Diners and Travelers.
Well, there you go. Welcome, Diners and Travelers, anyway, because we're back in Dublin, Ireland, again.
Yes.
For the second of two programs. And
we're wrapping up with three quite different restaurants and chefs.
Each really remarkable in their own right. Derry Clark at Le Crevin, who's first up, has been in business over 20 years. He's a celebrity TV chef as well as a celebrity chef, owner of a fine restaurant in Dublin. Tom O'Connell spent most of his career in the hotel business.
Right.
Although he was a director of food and beverage and that kind of stuff, so it's probably not surprising that he finished up owning a restaurant, and you'll hear the long and fascinating story of how he did that. And then,
did I rave about my lobster?
You didn't rave about your lobster in the interview
because I hadn't had it yet. So I better, it's time, I will say about how wonderful my lobster was.
But it was a fabulous lobster, and she even let me have some of it, folks. You can tell it must have been a big one. and then a fascinating submission to finish up, Elaine Murphy, at a combination restaurant, wine bar, and bookshop called The Winding Stair, beautifully located right in the heart of Dublin on the River Liffey at the Halfpenny or Halfpenny Bridge. So that's today's program, and we're sure you're going to enjoy it. And let's, without further ado, go
start
to Derry Clark of Le Crevin, the writer.
The restaurant's name is French, but the food really is not, is it?
It's not.
Let me introduce you, actually, because I haven't done that. And we're talking to Derry Clark, and his restaurant is Le Crevin, which is the writer.
Mm-hmm. The name came about because we're 22 years in business this year, which I think is a great achievement to have a restaurant.
Hello, yes.
It really is, especially in Ireland, recession, etc. But the restaurant then, I mean, I was French trained, came through the ranks, different French restaurants. So when we opened in 1989, we called it Le Crevin because I wanted to reflect the writer, Dublin's literary background.
Which is enormous. Immense. I mean, I don't even know how to explain it.
No, it really is. And, you know, you have to be here to experience it. And you can feel the history of literature in Dublin, walking the streets and going into the different pubs. And the pubs are there so long, and they have that kind of connection. Because all those writers have their Guinness and their morning coffee in these pubs. You know,
are there a lot of talented writers still living in Dublin?
They're not household names. I think writing now is very commercialized. I think good writers never write for making money, do they? You do meet, though, some nights down to Donny and Nesbitt's, which is a great pub down on Marion Row. It's a really old pub, very interesting people. You always meet someone interesting there, and you can always meet poets. A lot of poets drink in there.
And they do readings and that.
They do readings, and also they'll sell you their poetry for maybe a dollar or two.
Oh, shoot.
Which is kind of, you know,
depressing, actually.
Well, it is in one way, but I mean, it's the way it is. It is depressing, actually. There's no outlet for them, actually. There's no outlet, I don't think, poetry at the moment, is there? I mean, Seamus Heaney, of course, is our greatest living poet at the moment.
Well, let's jump back into, here you are, a leading restaurant in Dublin. What is your background? You learned to cook at the knees of your grandmother, or what?
I was lucky. I grew up in a family in Dublin, not too far from where the restaurant is. My dad was a food importer. He would import nearly everything, kind of obscure foods from around the world in the 30s, 40s, and 50s, 60s. So he was unusual
really?
In that way. Yeah, it really was. And not
but
just
who
into
was
Ireland.
His market? Who
well, his market? Well, his market was, funny enough, was Ireland and England. I mean, England is only across the Irish Sea, which is 2.5 hours by ferry, so it's not a long distance. So that was his market.
But things into Ireland at the time when everybody was half starving.
Well, there was. I mean, Ireland really was a different country in the 40s and 50s. Obviously, I don't remember it, but going with my dad, it was a different country. But he did bring in, you know, foods like cheese. I mean, at that stage, we weren't making cheese in Ireland. So he was the biggest cheese importer into here, and he'd import cheese from all over Europe, which is his mainstay. And there's always a market for that, because people love good food. It's like anything in good food, you'd always go somewhere to find it.
Well, I mean, I have to admit, I'm totally uninformed about Irish history. Now, Peter could do better with that. because he does it inside out and backwards, but from the British point of view, which is probably not the same thing.
Yeah, we really shouldn't talk about that. The most important thing is what's on the plate in front of us and what's been on the plate in front of us for these 22 years that you've been in business. And I'm sure politics didn't have a whole lot to do with that.
Well, no, the idea that I came to understand was from a friend of mine who was a food writer for the Washington Post, who was born and bred Dubliner. And she said to me, the food in Ireland is the purest you're going to ever find in the world. And that was like 15 years ago. So give us an overview of where we are now with food in Ireland.
Okay, it's like any country in the world. There's good restaurants and bad restaurants. And that's always going to happen anywhere you go in the world. I do feel in the last 20 years in Ireland, we have really taken a massive leap forward. Quite incredible what we've achieved here in 20 years.
I think so too.
It's quite incredible. I mean, we still have the image in the States of overcooked veg, meat, bad ingredients, badly cooked. And that was an image we had maybe from 30 years ago. That's changed completely. Now, there are still restaurants you will come across that still do that, unfortunately. And unfortunately, they are sometimes in the touristy areas. And they're surviving because tourists are only going there one night. So that's why they survive. It's unfortunate. It's frustrating, you know, for really good cooks in this country to see that.
Yeah.
But where we have really excelled, I think, in the last 20 years is our producers, our artisan producers around the country, our cheesemakers.
Yeah, now your restaurant really has forged great relationships with all these producers, right?
When I started here in 1989, I made a mission statement to myself that I would know every single person who produces my food, who makes my food for this restaurant. I didn't want to just know who they were. I wanted to know them as friends, as people, who they were, what they believed in, and where they were in life. And for me then, I could just really buy their products and pass it on. Do not too much to the food, but maybe enhance it if I could. As I hope I've achieved that. But definitely, I know them all personally. Every single item on this menu I have in this restaurant, I know who they are.
Well, you're one of the leading restaurants in Dublin. Who comes here? I said you're one of the leading restaurants in Dublin. Describe your clientele. Who comes here?
Sure, who comes here? Well, I mean, we are in a business area in Dublin. So Monday to Thursday would be a lot of corporate. So you'd have PR companies, law firms, accountancy firms. IT firms now are quite big in Dublin. We're expanding there. And then weekends, it's anniversaries, birthdays. And I noticed in the last few years that a younger demographic coming out to eat. Like, you know, couples in their 20s and 30s. And like Ireland for years had that pub culture, where people will go out and have loads of beer, maybe a ham sandwich. Now it's completely reversed. People come out for a night, go to a restaurant, and maybe have one beer in the Dublin pub, which are great, by the way. Dublin pubs are brilliant. But it's kind of a mix now, you know. Dinner, nice glass of wine, and then maybe downtown for a beer afterwards. Weekends, bars open later. So I think things are really cool at the moment. I love having a mix of customers, actually. I love people, you know, a good mix. I love seeing families having anniversaries, because to me, that's kind of an honour to the restaurant, that someone celebrates their anniversary here, special night, birthdays. And to me, it's a great honour to us.
We were just sitting there waiting to get seated, and we met somebody from Chicago.
Yeah.
Who knows your wife?
That's right. Sally Ann was reared in Chicago. Two of her siblings were born there, actually, and one is still there. Jim Parker lives in Chicago. And his neighbours came in tonight, which is quite incredible, isn't it, really? Which is great. I mean, you know, actually, my favourite city in the States is Chicago. I just love it. Something about it,
it's real.
It is real, actually, you know. It's gorgeous. And the layout, the kind of design of the city is quite spectacular, I think.
Tell us about the design of this place. It's really smart.
Yeah, we're in a Georgian area, so the building's average age is 350 years old around here. The English gave us in Ireland Dublin, and they gave us Dublin a lovely architecture. They left a great architecture for us. They probably have the best Georgian streets in Europe given to us, and it's a beautiful area. But we are in the kind of muses behind the Georgian areas, and we were lucky enough that the two buildings over here were condemned, so we could knock them down. They weren't protected because they're very strict in what you do. So we kind of have a modern building in an old area, which kind of works well. And we built this 10 years ago from scratch. We closed down for 6 months. And funny enough, we kept on our key team. 20 staff for 6 months, paid. So when we reopened again, we wanted to have the same restaurant, the same people working here. Because in a restaurant, the people who work there and the customers who come in, they're the two people that make a restaurant. They make the whole thing. It's not really anything else. You know, it's the guest and the staff who work there make a restaurant.
You are a celebrity chef, right?
You know, I hate that word, celebrity chef.
I know.
You know, people say it to me, you know, you're a celebrity chef. And I kind of actually, I'm a working chef.
But, yeah, but you're on TV and radio and all that stuff, right? You're a big name.
In small Ireland, you know, I'm probably, you know, a biggish fish in a small, very small pond, which is, I suppose, in one way.
Okay, have you never been on the Today Show?
Today Show, that's in the States.
Yeah.
No. I was never on radio or TV in the States.
Okay.
This is my first to go across your lovely land.
You got a pass. You're not really an egotistical person.
I do a bit of work in the States, and, you know, lucky enough, especially in New York, I do some work there a couple of times a year.
I
love going over there. I mean, to me, actually, New York is a hot city for food. Being a lover of food, being a lover of good food and a lover of exciting food. I think New York is the place.
Where do you go in New York?
But every time is different. Obviously, you have to, you know, suss out what's different. Well, my favorite chef, obviously, in the States for me, well, two favorite chefs, actually, is Thomas Kelleher. He's my favorite. And Charlie Trotter. I know Charlie Trotter for many years. Met him a couple of times. I admire him because he was probably one of the first chefs in the States that came up through the ranks and achieved. And I think gave North America a name for food. That's two names I can pick, I think, that for me, anyway, gave North America... Name them for food, you know, really.
And okay, now, let's move a little bit. If somebody wants to come here and eat, what are they going to expect to eat?
So maybe you should answer that question because I'd be biased. I'd just say to you, everything is spectacular and you'd be happy. But look at the menu tonight. The menu here tonight, you know, first of all, the menu is built around what's in season. That's the key, number one. Number two, everything there is bang in season, looking at it now. It could change next week. Not all of it. We don't change the full menu. We will change two or three dishes each week.
There is a French influence in some of the dishes, right?
Well, there is. I mean, well, I'm classically French trained, and I think two chefs I just mentioned would be also. The classical French training gives that base. It gives you the foundation. And every building, the best buildings always have the best foundations. They'll always stand the test of time. And that's how I always base upon anyone who works here as chefs. I like them to have a classical French training. The good basics. The real basics. Because you get a depth, an understanding of food you're doing, and your flavors. I always try and get the flavors to come out. And that's what the French do give you, yeah. I got to say. So tonight, I mean, one thing I love...
Let's do a little food porn.
Sure,
here.
Well, I just go now, the starting.
What about the stuff we had? Explain that. I had scallops.
Scallops. You had scallops which come from West Cork. They come from the O'Sullivan brothers in Castletown Bear. They're two brothers, and I've gone fishing with them several times for scallops and prawns. So, and I've had a few beers with them, so I know them pretty well. They're good guys. Bang in season for the scallops, and I have them on at the moment, as you can see. I do them quite simply. I did them with the linguine, which we make ourselves. We dried ourselves.
You make the linguine?
Oh, yeah. We do every single thing on this menu is completely done from scratch. We don't... everything is done. Everything we do from scratch. That's a key as well, I think, you know. And we do it simply. I mean, that was linguine. I think it was some mussels in there. And they came from Carlingford Lough, which is north of Dublin. Between Dublin and Belfast. Lovely Lough. Gorgeous place to be, actually. And they do lovely oysters as well, which I had on tonight as well.
Here is the ultimate thing. I mean, like, I had this Connemara Hill lamb.
Yeah.
The lamb was to die for. It was so gorgeous. You couldn't even wreck that.
Well, you picked the very, very best dish tonight, in actual fact. Connemara Hill lamb came into season on the 1st of July, and it goes to the 1st of January. It's from Mayo, Galway, right along the western seaboard. It's almost wild lamb. It's on the hills of Connemara, and it eats the wild grasses and ferns. And I bet you got a kind of a salty flavor, a little salt there.
Oh, it's wonderful.
That's natural salt, because the sea air, the salty air, Atlantic Ocean coming in. It's a very small lamb. It's about 25% smaller than most
lambs. It was
lambs.
Small.
It is a small lamb. Yeah. It's very, very sought after and quite expensive. But funny enough, I never go by the price of anything. I go by the quality. Quality is the key. I think if something's expensive, less is more. That makes sense. Feed of lamb, have a big, what's it called, slow braised shoulder or something. But that is a beautiful dish. I'm very, very proud of that. Very few restaurants actually on the East Coast are... I'm trying to get more chefs to use it. Very good friend of mine, Chapter One, have it in Dublin, which is a brilliant restaurant.
We
Ross Lewis is one of my best friends, and he's a spectacular chef. And his restaurant is really spectacular, and he swears by the Connemara lamb.
Okay, now, the rabbit, you had, or what did you have? You had the fish.
If I don't have meat on the plate, it can't be dinner.
Yorkshire man, for sure.
Yeah, that's for sure, but I had the sea bass, and we've spoken to somebody since we were in Dublin who said, I won't serve this farmed sea bass stuff. It has to be the real thing. And the wonderful thing about Ireland's fishing waters is you can get the real thing still.
Well, there are, unfortunately, we have a thing called quotas, which is, I won't go into it now, because
you're
it
the first
me.
Person, by the way, who actually admitted to that.
Yeah, we have quotas. I mean, that's the thing. We're in the EU, and the EU are the dictators of all we do, which is kind of unfortunate. You know, our independence in that sense is gone. Sea bass is wreck bass. How we get it this time of year in September is, it's called wreck bass because it lives around wrecks, shipwrecks. And around this time of year, it actually comes out from the wrecks. That's how they catch it. And there is a quota on it. Terry, which I rang him this morning at 4 a.m. I set my alarm. I rang his mobile. He was out 20 miles off Dundalk on the Irish Sea. And he caught that wreck bass. He had caught 20 wreck bass. I bought 10 of them. I said, I'll take 10, Terry. So they came down to me this morning. And we gutted them. We'll sell them tonight and tomorrow night. So that's how I do it. But he would often, I mean, if he caught cod tonight as incidental catch in his net, if his quota is up for cod, that cod has to go back into the water. It goes back in dead. You can't land it.
Really?
It will go back in dead, yeah. It will have, you just throw it overside. So the crabs will have a nice feed on it, but that's about all it'll go. It's very shameful, really. It's something we have to look at in our fishing industry, and not just Ireland, it's worldwide, actually. It's not just here. It's all over the world. Our fishing industry will have to be re-looked at, not for our generation, but for two generations behind us. We don't do them justice. No, we really are. We actually are shameful what we're doing, actually, at sea. We really are ashamed. We should be ashamed of ourselves.
So glad.
Now, you also have halibut on the menu. Now, is that local, too? You have halibut on your menu.
Yeah, I do try and go for wild fish. You know, I try and stay away from farmed fish for obvious reasons. I know farmed fish has its place because it does... Well, farmed fish is quite bad, too, for the ecosystem. To feed them, but that halibut is from the west coast of Ireland, and that was landed in Castlebar, wild, very, very expensive fish. I love my fish on the bone, so I do try and work hard to get the portions out of it. I don't like to waste anything. I think you have to respect if you catch something that is organic, that is part of us, it should be respected and used. So that's why I mean venison on tonight too. I had a lovely venison which you didn't have that comes from Wicklow. It's wild venison, just banging season again. Came in last week again. Where I live in the Dublin Mountains, so we're surrounded by deer, which I love. I love the animal, actually. I love red deer, fallow deer. I love them. I love them to see, actually. I think they're gorgeous things to look at. So I try to switch off when I'm cooking them. Bambi.
You know, we haven't really given a profile of you, which is, I mean, you are really big-time chef in Dublin. You do television, radio. Have you written books?
We did two books. Did one about 6 years ago, really on myself and Sally Ann, my wife, who works here with me, and the people.
Poor Sally Ann, by the way, for everybody listening, pray for her because she has a broken ankle.
She said the cast coming off really soon.
Yeah,
I know.
I sent it
back
really
to work. I know. I think
thing.
You see the things people do to get off work. I don't know. I'll have to look at that. You know? And she's kind of looking for once get pay, sick pay. I said no. I'll give you a bed and board. That'll be enough. Have to, you know, treat them mean, keep them keen. No, joke. But no, we did a book on what we achieved here and our people who work here, like Martina, our sommelier, is here 15 years. Alan, one of our managers, is here 15 years. And our suppliers. In this book, we have our suppliers there and their lives. And actually, I had great fun doing that book because I went around the country. Take a photograph of them, you know, photographers. We had a ball actually for 2 or 3 weeks. We were around the country meeting these guys and girls. People who produce food, I think, is kind of the honest and most realest thing you can do in life. I'm actually always kind of envious. Sometimes I wish I was a food producer rather than a cook. I think I get more from it, if that makes sense.
Yes. I mean, I know a lot of food producers that have dropped out and gone to producing food.
I know a couple of chefs done that. I know one chef especially, he's come by a pig farmer, organic pigs. When you rang him this evening, actually,
I know somebody did pigs, too. I mean, I don't know what the attraction is, but I guess there is some.
There is.
Well, listen, I mean, I have to tell you that we could talk forever and ever, as you know.
About food. You can talk all night about food, can't you, really?
Yeah. Well, no, I can talk to you all night.
You really can.
Because you're so charming. And we certainly enjoyed our stay now, here, Derry.
Let's get a website in here, Derry.
Sure, yeah. Website, lecrivain.com.
Spell that out, because it's got an I in an unusual place.
Oh, yeah, it has, really. The spelling is a little bit different. lecrivain.com.
And you know, listeners, by now, that Peter's a little obsessive about making sure that people can find their way. So I actually walked here from the Shelburne to make sure that I've found the restaurant, and I had to ask somebody along the way. So, yes, the address is on Lower Baggot Street. It is just beyond Fitzwilliam Street, but you better look on the right almost immediately for a little enclave called Celtic Court, because that's where you'll find Lecrivain, and our cab driver didn't know. So expect.
I have to give him. No, he's not good. He's obviously. He must have come in from somewhere else. He wasn't Irish, was he?
He was not Irish.
There you go.
So that's how to find it. It's a 5-minute walk from St. Stephen's Green. It's in a district of wonderful Georgian buildings, but it's a wonderful architectural creation in its own right.
It really
and
is.
Derry, it was just a delight to meet with you this evening.
Derry, I mean, the one thing I realized, I do not know how to say thank you in Gaelic. How is it?
Garbíle maragat.
I don't think I can get that out, but I'm going to say ditto.
Well, anyone, any of your listeners ever in Dublin, please say hello and say how they came about us. I'd love to meet them.
And we'll be right back after a short break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Okay. Welcome back. Now I guess I can rave about how much fun I had with Tom O'Connell.
You can. Tom O'Connell has...
Oh, he was great.
A little bit of the gift of the gab, as they say.
He sure does.
He explains in the interview that Irish people don't need to kiss the Blarney Stone in order to get lots of Blarney. They have a built-in supply.
Yeah. And I get to talk about my wonderful lobster, which was the lead main course on the tasting menu that night.
Was it?
Well, of the seafood.
It was the lead course.
Yeah. I saw it was out of the water from the West Coast. It was a West Coast lobster. Out of the water less than 10 hours when I had it. And I visited it in their lobster tank.
Before they
took it out. And they were a frisky lot, those lobsters.
They were a frisky lot, but they weren't frisky after we were done with them.
Well, yeah, but apparently they take them out, they put them in briefly into boiling water, and then they throw them in this wonderful hot coal oven, and boy, it was delicious. I wish I had that right now.
Yeah, there you go. And you're only having chicken tonight, oh dear.
Oh dear. No, we always have just chicken.
Never mind. Never mind. Back to Tom O'Connell and lobsters.
And O'Connell's is the restaurant, and it's a wonderful experience all the way around. Well, here we are. I feel like we're really finally in real Dublin with an authentic Dubliner personality. That's Tom O'Connell, and we're at his restaurant, O'Connell's. In Donnybrook, you seem to me, I had a Dubliner neighbor for years and years and years when I lived in Philadelphia and adored her. And you have the same kind of wit about you and an ease about your dealing with people. Is this a national characteristic?
Well, first of all, I have to confess that even though I was born in Dublin, I'm not really a Dubliner.
Okay.
But I suppose the characteristics you describe are those slightly of a roguish Irishman. So sometimes Irish ladies can be like that too, although they can be slightly more harder, slightly to figure out. I spent my whole life trying to figure out Irish ladies, and I haven't quite got there yet. But maybe you Americans, you can figure that out. No, you know about kissing the Blarney Stone. No Irish person has ever kissed the Blarney Stone because we've got it ingrained in us.
I think so. But you're so hospitable. That's part of it too.
Well, we are happy. That's something about being Irish, and I think we're proud of it. We like people. We have an affinity with people. of course, there are lots of races in the world and nationalities in the world who are very welcoming and everything, but it seems to be something inherently Irish. We are very conscious of what it is to live away from home, to welcome visitors. We were a country of large families. We are also in our history, you will be very well aware, in the United States, that we have sent lots of our families abroad, so it is always a joy for us to welcome people back and very often to explore, maybe do they have a connection with Ireland. But it's nice to be hospitable. It's very much part of what it is to be Irish. We're big families. In that way, probably we're like the Italians in particular and some of those races, the Spanish. We just love being in families and we understand people.
Now, you come from a background where you are in hospitality, food and beverage for like your entire life?
That's correct. I went to Hotel Management College here in Ireland. But before that, I grew up in a family in a small village in Ireland. My father had a business which really sold everything from coffins to grain to fertilizer.
Oh,
times of the year, then he bought the wool off the sheep and he sold the seed, which was then sown, and eventually he might get paid for the seed if thanks be to goodness, the seed actually grew and we had a good harvest. We had a grocery, we had the post office and we had a bar. So I suppose I grew up at the time when we had to get involved early. And I remember pulling pints of Guinness when in fact I wasn't able to reach up to the counter. The customer would reach over the counter and take the pint of Guinness from me. The business was ingrained into me, indeed it was.
And the storytelling, because my neighbor Dorothy Dodani had the same absolute gift for storytelling that kept us enthralled for hours.
Storytelling is something that, again, we grew up with. It has disappeared, I suppose. Back, if you lived coming up to the 40s, 50s, 60s, there would have been great storytelling and storytellers in Ireland. But it goes back again to the Irish having a little bit, as we say, the gift of the gab.
Now, let's get back to this. You started out here, but you worked abroad for many years.
Yes, I went to hotel management school down in Shannon Airport in Ireland, which would have been well known to people from the United States because originally, you would have flown from North America across the Atlantic
into
Shannon,
free.
And it was a major really airport. And before Shannon, you had the sea boats, the seaplanes landing on the Shannon, and then eventually Shannon Airport came when the new airlines arrived. A very good hotel management school was set up down there. I had the privilege of going there in 1972, and in 1976. I was sent to the Waldorf Astoria in New York.
Oh, you were in New York?
I was in New York. I was there in bicentennial year, so it was an absolutely fantastic year to be in the Waldorf because, as you probably know, the Waldorf is the unofficial, I suppose, White House of New York, you would almost say, because that's where all heads of states are accommodated by the American government. Well, we're at that stage anyway, and I think it's still the case in the Waldorf Towers.
Yeah, we know the Waldorf quite well, actually. I won some sort of speech contest and got to stay there when I was like 16 or 17. I was
Goodness.
Very impressed.
I hope Mama and Papa came.
We did have a chaperone.
Good. Wouldn't be a very good idea.
So you worked in New York for how long?
I worked there for a year and a half, and it was a tremendous year to be there. But I was in hotel management school. It was a hotel management school that was always strong in food and beverage. The Waldorf was an extraordinary place for, I think I was 18 or no, actually at that stage about 19 years of age. I was earning the amazing sum of $96 a week, 45 of which went to my rent in a very shared, very small apartment, actually in the center of Manhattan on the next block to the Waldorf. And then the remaining amount of money would have been spent by Friday midnight in Flanagan's Pub, I think if I recall, somewhere in the East 50s. On Manhattan. And thereafter, I would live on breakfast in the Waldorf in the morning, and hopefully there'd be a bit of lunch hanging around somewhere in the catering department. But anyway, those were great years, and I have actually still amazing contacts with the people I worked with at the Waldorf. But from there, I went on and I worked with Hilton International. I left with Hilton 76, Hilton, at that time, Corporation in the Waldorf, and went immediately to Hilton International in Brussels and stayed then with Hilton International for 14 years.
Oh, wow.
All the time as, first of all, training So 76, I went into the Hilton. 677, I went into the Hilton in Brussels in Belgium, and eventually left Hilton in 88, having become a food and beverage director a number of years earlier. My last job with Hilton was food and beverage director at the London Hilton on Park Lane, and I became director of food and beverage then at the Savoy Hotel in London.
Oh, yeah.
89, their centenary year.
But you then decided to return to Dublin.
Now, you must have met, I think it was Angela, was it Marasco?
Maitre d' at the Savoy. Terrific man.
Yeah, well, he
Maresco was maitre d' in the Savoy Grill for the full length of time I was there.
Yeah, well, he got fired.
Amazing. He got what?
He got fired. He got laid off, and Sir Rocco Forte, who had been a regular customer at the Savoy and had bought Brown's Hotel, hired him to be maitre d' at Brown's Hotel.
Well, first of all, in defense of Mr. Maresca, I permit me to correct the word fired. Anybody who would have been courageous enough to fire Mr. Maresca would have ended up in the sea off Naples. So I think actually the correct story is that Maresca decided he was going, and his friend, actually, Rocco Forte, called him and hired him to Brown's Hotel. Right. Indeed. He has now, I think, he has retired from Brown's.
The funniest thing he told me, and it's worth repeating in this interview, is that Sir Rocco invited him to lunch, offered him the job, and he was so excited, he went home and told his wife, and she said, "How much are you going to get paid?" And he said, "I don't know."
Well, knowing Maresca, that is indeed possible, because Maresca, like some of those great Italians, had a huge heart.
Yes.
But they also were very shrewd and very smart businessmen. And Maresca was a tremendous businessman and a tremendous host. But I think he found out very well afterwards. And he turned out to be very happy there.
I met him
at Brown's a few years ago, actually.
Oh, he had some wonderful stories, but we should continue your story, because at some point a touch of madness crept in and you said, "Well, you know, I don't need a salary anymore. I'm going to waste my time running restaurants." So how did that happen?
That's not exactly how it happened.
Well, actually, it's an interesting story from a professional point of view, because I became a general manager. I left the Savoy after 5 years to go to the Ritz Hotel in London, where I became a deputy general manager, which executive assistant manager in charge of food and beverage. And I went on to become the general manager. And after a year, I was offered a job in Dublin as general manager of a leading hotel in Dublin. And I took that job. But after about 2.5 years, my brother had been approached to open a very large restaurant in Dublin, but he was living in Cork. And he said to me, "I can't do this on my own. I've got to have somebody in Dublin. Would you be interested?" And I jumped immediately, because I realized that I was much happier in food and beverage, in my domain as food and beverage. So I jumped at it, and we opened O'Connell's in Ballsbridge in 1999 and traded in Ballsbridge until 2008. We had been very successful, very busy restaurant. The restaurant had 220 seats. It was located in a hotel called Bewley's, and the hotel was sold in 2008, and we were not able to agree an acceptable business arrangement to go forward. So we moved our restaurant in 2008 back to the location where I had actually run the hotel. But in 2010, we got the opportunity to move to our current location in Donnybrook with a long-term lease. And for the first time, a restaurant actually on the street.
Which is where we are now.
Which was where we are now. And it's something that we always aspire to. So when that opportunity came, we jumped and we came here to Donnybrook, and we hope to have a long, successful trading period here.
I mean, what is in your veins? So your brother's a restaurateur, your sister, Dorina Allen, has started the Ballymaloo School, and
we were all fortunate to come from a home where food was important. So, you know, when you're young, you don't really realize, but it was not such a challenge for us. She went off and she studied hotel management and realized that she much preferred food and got into food, and the rest is really history. She's very well known. We were 9 in the family. She was the eldest. I'm the middle child. And when it came to me, I decided I wanted to do hotel management. You know, did I really know why I wanted to be hotel manager? I'm not entirely sure. But again, in my case, I found that I was far more comfortable with food and drink and became a food and beverage director for many years and therefore ended up. But I suppose it was backed up by the fact that we grew up with good food.
Now, what about this restaurant? I mean, people wanting to come here. Well, like, who might want to come here?
O'Connell's, when we created it in Ballsbridge, had experience coming from various sides. My own experience was that I had worked for some of the finest hotel companies, I suppose, in the world. I had grown up with amazing chefs. I had become experienced with amazing chefs. So I brought to the table a good food knowledge. My brother Rory O'Connell, who set it up with me, had amazing knowledge as well, had been chef in Ballymaloe, was still chef there, and we had another partner at that time also who had amazing food knowledge. And as we grew, we all had something in common, the very best ingredients, and from my side I had worked with good chefs, so we started off just with that knowledge and with that experience, and we put a good team together. And we found that the formula worked. What was it? To buy the very best local indigenous ingredients as far as possible.
Which
cook simply
here.
With good value for money prices. Value for money has been synonymous with O'Connell's from the day we opened. So it's good food and value for money. So we were always a middle market price, trying to punch above our weight in terms of delivering something above that.
Is your clientele local or
90%
travelers.
Local.
Okay.
Absolutely,
well,
90%
something.
Local.
That tells you a great deal, actually.
We find here in Donnybrook, we are here now 10 months, and our strength is that we are finding back all our clientele of our 9 years when we set up originally in Ballsbridge.
Because you realize now your secret is out. The percentage of people coming from outside is probably going to rise.
It is growing. It is growing, and we are... It is actually humbling to be interviewed by people like yourselves, and maybe one feels slightly out of place on your program. But what is special, and we feel a great loyalty to our customers. I had an interesting experience recently. People were graduating from high school, and I did a deal because I love to get families in, and I said, you come in with two adults and you get a free meal. And on the evening of the high school graduation, when they get their results and they find out what they have, you know, what a day academic achievement they had, this young lady came in and she said, and her parents said to me, you won't realize, but you did my young daughter her communion, her first Holy Communion.
Oh, wonderful.
When she was 7 years of age.
Amazing.
And she's now 19 years of age, so now you're doing her graduation.
Oh, well, she
so, and I think this was something special for me. And then in our early years, about 2000, we did the birthday party of a lady. We did her 70th birthday party. And 10 years later, she came back for her 80th, and she said, can I write you in for my 90th? Can you please take a reservation for my 90th? So you know what? I get a real buzz out of that. I really get a buzz out of that.
So now tell me, like, on your menu, what kinds of things would we expect to eat
well,
tonight?
Well, if I am looking at my menu and I'm looking what is best, I am looking, first thing is if I look in our first courses, I see Bill Casey's Shanagarry Irish Organic Smoked Salmon.
That
Bill Casey has
that.
Been supplying me with smoked salmon since 1999. No other supplier. I see Fingal Ferguson's Smoked Gubeen Bacon. Absolutely sensational product. Equally, I've been buying it since 1999. I have, in this restaurant, tonight I have venison, wild deer. The season is just since the 1st of September. Our chef will buy an entire animal. He'll buy the entire, and we will either have roast leg or we will make stews. We will make grilled meat. We really have the local ingredients. I have blood sausage, you call, in North America. We call it black pudding. My one is made, I'm sorry, with real blood. It's really an amazing recipe. It is now made by a lady who's in her 60s, but her mum owned the recipe, and her mum has been here to the restaurant. She's 92 years of age. So
wow.
We know her as Mrs. Black Pudding. And there's a little story of all those things. We have coming up on the 27th of October, first time we've done it, we have an Irish food producers evening with Spanish wine. So we will have our person there from the Irish Hereford prime beef. We will have Bill Casey, who's been smoking our smoked salmon, as I said, since 99. We'll have the fisherman up from West Cork, who, and they fish for us in the Atlantic, and we get food up from them 6 days a week. So everything about our food is provenance, but it's not new. We've been doing it since 99.
Well, I'm telling you, I can't wait to taste the stuff. You also are having a great time doing this. I'm very impressed with how connected you are with food in your restaurant.
Well, we grow, and I suppose we try to vary the menu. For example, in this menu, I introduced the lobster tank, and we now have fresh lobster coming in from down coming in off right around the Kerry coast and the Cork coast. We say that the Kerry coast here is the next parish is Boston. Ah. So that's where our lobsters
are
coming from.
I want some of that, Tom.
Yeah, and we're keeping our lobsters just for about 24 hours here. So really the average lobster
you have a lobster tank.
Yes, we have a lobster tank. It's one of my follies in this restaurant.
And what about this bar?
Bar here, the premises, interesting story. When we choose this premises, I came in, the owner of the premises approached me, and he said to me, would you be interested in looking at my premises? I said, I don't have to look at it. I am interested. And he said to me, why? I said, I had a pint in there about 4 months ago. And I said, this place is a restaurant waiting to happen. I said, it's quite unbelievable that you approach me. So after much negotiation, as tends to be the case in Ireland, we managed to get the keys about 8 months later.
You were so totally delightful. We could talk to you forever and ever and ever. What do you say, Robert?
But we probably better not talk on the air any longer.
But we'll talk afterwards.
Absolutely. So it's been a pleasure to meet you, Tom, and we're certainly looking forward to our evening at this restaurant.
Thank you, Anne and Peter.
And now it's time for another break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Well, here we are again. This program sure is going fast, huh?
It is, yeah.
It is, but these Irish people, they sure can talk.
And now we're moving on to the winding stair.
Yeah, and Elaine Murphy has a wonderful story all of her own.
Yeah, but I might say that, believe it, what is called the winding stair.
Yeah, and there are lots of them.
There are lots of them.
It should really be the winding stairs, but the website is winding stair, as if there's only one.
And the bookstore she owns that as well.
Yeah, it's really an interesting establishment.
The amazing thing was we had sort of an assortment of appetizers, then we split a main, but I looked at some of the other tables that they were relatively small people, and I couldn't believe they were eating. What was that big dish that we're all?
Well, they had a pork loin that was stuffed.
Oh, that was it. It was enough for four.
It had a rhubarb sauce, and we watched the young man at the next table, who was obviously a businessman on his lunch break, and he systematically devoured the whole thing.
It was huge,
and followed it with dessert. So there are. Come hungry to the winding stair.
Yeah, I mean, they're serious about their literary traditions, and they're also, you know, serious about their food. So here we have this library. We had chapter one. We had the previous
Lekrava. Yeah, we have the writer.
Now we have the writer.
And now we have the bookshop.
Talk about a charmer. We're sitting in one now. It's an establishment, a restaurant, with a bookstore called The Winding Stair, talking to the owner, Elaine Murphy. Welcome to On the Menu, Elaine.
Thank you.
This is so, so delightful. And it has an interesting story. For our listeners, let's start with the configuration of the place, the bookstore, the Winding Stair, the cafe, the restaurant.
So The Winding Stair was originally a cafe and bookshop back in the 80s, originally a tweed mill, actually, back in the 1940s. And then it became a very iconic, well-known literary place where a lot of artists and poets and filmmakers came, hung out, wrote books, wrote novels, discussed politics. And it was a bookstore on the ground floor and then a cafe and bookstore on the top three floors. So
it's a glorious building.
It's a really wonderful, beautiful old factory building. So it was a tweed mill, and it has
steel girders,
which were put in to support the tweed looms.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and then those beautiful columns, steel columns, which also were supporting the looms. And we've kept those, that look of that factory building. It's got old, distressed floors.
Beautiful.
Original pine. And beautiful big windows, factory windows that look onto the River Liffey.
Yes, I mean, the view is glorious, too.
Yeah. When I came here as a student, and when I inherited the building in 2005, I really felt the building spoke to us, and building that really dictated, in a way, the style of the food and the style of the furniture, because I felt that the room really, it felt quite scholarly. Even then, even when it was in a factory way, there was definitely a sense of a schoolroom with the floors and with the style. It would just... The books were at the walls, and I thought the food has to represent that somehow.
And you were, of course, very near Trinity College, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I would have been, Trinity College is just over the river.
Which you attended.
Which I attended, and I was a big fan of this as a cafe during my student years. Crises and fun times were had here by myself and my college friends.
Right.
Yeah, so it was really in my heart. It was a place that was very close to my heart since from a very young age.
But you evolved from an academician to hospitality person.
Yeah.
A food person. You've always been.
Yeah.
Integrated it all into.
Yeah.
What now is your mission, you said, is to maintain this connection between food and culture. And
that's
food
it.
And
Yeah.
Literature.
And I mean, it's interesting for me because my own personal journey was definitely one that was combined with literature, academia, and food was always there in the background. And I suppose I never expected that I would end up in the food business. I probably thought I was going to be an academic. But this building actually was a place that brought all those things together for me because it was a place that was about my student life, very much immersed in literature and politics. And so when I inherited the building, it was the perfect symbiosis of all those things. I arrived here, the books were still here, the place was a little bit frayed at the edges, needed a little bit of love.
Now, what kind of bookstore? It's an independent bookstore. You
yes.
own that too.
Yeah,
You buy the book.
Yeah, so when we inherited the building, it was the bookstore on the ground floor and then all the books on the various levels. So we decided that we would make the restaurant on two of those levels on the first and second floor, but we would keep an independent bookstore on the ground floor. And we were quite inspired by a lot of the New York independent stores. When we styled it, what we had in our mind was a sort of a glamorous Muppet show type set. The chandelier,
oh, yeah.
Some wallpaper, and a little bit frayed, but a little bit kind of latter day glamorous. That was our idea for the bookstore. And we also wanted to keep a very firm eye on ordering independent books. Contemporary, some edgy, to be a little bit off-center, to do a lot of politics.
Because you have major competition in Ireland, as we have in the U.S., and I'm sure it's probably everywhere in the world with all
yeah.
the big chains.
Independent bookstores are really struggling,
yeah.
and we were hoping that the restaurant would be able to support it in some way, and in fact, that's what's happened. So it's great, and it really is interesting, because having a bookstore and a restaurant combined, and a cafe in the bookstore, well, the cafe in the bookstore is tiny, but it really... It gives you a window into a demographic that just having a restaurant wouldn't. So you'll be mentioned as a restaurant in literary columns because the restaurant is very much about literature as well. And so that's quite an interesting combination. And it's actually the exact combination that I felt was inside of me.
You.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, who comes here now?
As customers.
Yeah.
Incredibly, we would probably be the restaurant in Dublin, in fact, in Ireland, that has the biggest mix in terms of profile. Really, what I wanted to do, and this is really close to my heart, I always wanted to have a restaurant that was not intimidating, that although it had a clear identity, it was a place where people could bring their grandmothers, their 80, 90-year-old grandmothers, or foodies could come, or people could come who were feeling glamorous and wanting a glamorous evening. And hopefully, and in fact, that's what that is really our
really?
Client base. It's amazing. And every new waiter that starts here comments on the fact that we have the biggest mix. We have extremely trendy people, media types. We have a lot of the theatre. We have a lot of actors and directors. We have movie stars. We've had Tom Waits. We've had
oh,
Bono.
Yeah.
yeah. We've had Angelica Houston. many different types of Alice Waters came three nights in a row when she was here.
Now that was a tribute.
Yeah, that was my biggest honor, really, actually, having her.
Did you meet her?
Yes, I did. Yeah,
you talked a lot.
She came with her daughter, yeah. So
was her daughter in school here?
No, I think they came on a trip. They were doing some of Edible Playground.
Tour. Okay.
Yeah. But the place is actually continues in that vein. You know, you'll have a lot. You'll have one night where you'll have somebody bringing their 80-year-old grandmother. And in fact, the food really is extremely accessible in that way. What I wanted to do was make a menu that was as accessible to really intense foodies as it was to old Irish grandmothers or visitors. Mm-hmm. And in fact, that's what we've done. The menu is entirely Irish.
Now, let's talk about the menu here. We have not yet tasted the food, but we do have the menu. Now, you're open for both lunch and dinner.
Yep.
How many days?
7 days. So
every day.
Never sleep.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
We open from 12 onwards.
And you just stay open all day?
We do.
Okay.
Yeah. Unusually.
And would you call this modern Irish or just
no.
Irish? Or
I wouldn't, actually. And it's funny because I just put a listing in, we were listed in a guide yesterday, and the woman asked me, what shall I call this? Is it contemporary Irish? Is it Irish with a twist? And I said, no, it's just Irish food. And in fact, what we have done is try to revive some old Irish recipes. And you'll find people coming in and saying, oh my goodness, I haven't had a whatever, you know, liver and bacon or a coddle or a yellow man, which is a brittle Irish
dessert. It's called what?
Yellow man, which is like it's almost like a butterscotch, or a boxty, which is an Irish potato cake.
Okay.
Haven't had those in years. Or actually, an interesting thing that we found is that having chefs come work with us from different parts of the world, you'll find that they will bring recipes from their own countries and homelands that are incredibly similar. Every peasant culture has a very similar base, so you'll always have dumplings or braised meat or lamb shanks or some kind of canoodling, or you know.
Yeah, every single culture has had sort of a dumpling, I know.
A dumpling, or a stew. Yeah. Or so we actually will have recipes that, you know, one of our Czech chefs will bring from his grandmother, and we will use an Irish version of it. Similarly, we will have, what we often try to do is replace something like a Parmesan with an Irish equivalent. We have an amazing cheese.
So it's classic Irish, is what
you're
saying.
I mean, I suppose it's contemporary in the sense we're using very current artisan producers. But the recipes themselves are dead simple, and that's the key thing. The food it will be a very different experience than what you had last night, for instance, in Chapter 1, because it's really simple, very rustic. The produce is what's talking to you, not the styling on the plate. So
now, who does cooking? You say chefs. I mean, you have a number of chefs.
We do. Our head chef is Thomas Kalman. And he's been with us since we opened.
He's Irish.
He's actually Czech. He's from Czech.
His name's
Thomas Kalman.
Carmen.
Kalman.
Kalman.
Yeah. I will write the menus for them. So I do a lot of work in the menus, and I really drive the food. Then we will do a lot of sourcing of new produce from small artisans. And a lot of our menu items are written around the produce.
Ingredients.
Yeah.
Right. Let's look at the menu and just pick out a few things to talk about. It's, our listeners really like to have all the yummy details.
I know. I can imagine. Well, one of the things I love on the appetizers there is this O'Doherty's black pudding fried with gabine chorizo, Wexford baby potatoes, and sourdough toast. Now, that's an interesting one. That's a recipe I actually found in Yorkshire, believe it or not.
Where's that?
Yorkshire. So it's the third item down on the menu there. It's O'Doherty's black pudding.
Oh, I see it.
And black pudding, as you know, is an Irish blood sausage. It's a really traditional, old-fashioned blood sausage.
But chorizo isn't.
Chorizo isn't, but here's the thing. We in Ireland have a charcuterie industry, lots of salumis that most Irish people don't even know about it. So this chorizo that you see here is from Gabine, which is in East Cork, where I believe you'll be visiting very soon. You should ask Dorina Allen about this. Gabine is a really amazing cheese and pork farm, and they make their own chorizo in the style of southern Spain. So this is all Irish. It's chorizo, obviously, is not originally an Irish thing, but this is one of the things we'll do right through this menu. You'll see further down Glebe Brehon cheese. Now, that is a Gruyere-style cheese, but it's from Ireland. You'll also see an Irish feta called Nochlara from Waterford. But just going back to the pudding is blood sausage is one of those things like Marmite where, you know, you'll find a lot of people saying, oh, I really don't like blood sausage. In this version, we crumble the black pudding and we fry it with shirito. So the shirito oil comes out and then we add some of the baby Wexford potatoes. And I have yet to meet somebody who hasn't loved it.
Sounds
it's
great.
Really simple, crumbly. It's almost like a hash.
Now you have meat and you have... It's actually meat heavy, but you do have some seafood, right?
Yeah, no, it's not actually meat heavy. If you go down, you might not recognize the blossom, for instance, as fish. That's served with a Jerusalem artichoke, which is... which grow all over Ireland.
Yeah, I can't get rid of them in my backyard.
Yeah, they're like a weed, but actually very few Irish people really use them. We don't use them enough, but they're so delicious and they're everywhere. You call them sunchokes, right?
Well, I call them Jerusalem
artichokes. Yeah.
But something they are known as sunchokes as well.
Yeah, so we serve that blossom. Blossom is like almost like pollock. It's a white fish. And it's not overfished, so it's very sustainable. We serve that with lemon and thyme roasted Jerusalem artichoke.
So you are also very concerned with such things as sustainability.
Yes. Yeah, we don't use any farmed fish apart from one exception, which is two exceptions. Goatsbridge trout, which is a fantastic farm, which I visited, and an organic farm, and an organic Clare Island salmon, which again is a wonderful farm. They use very, very good methods. They have a really good ethos. The fish is not in any trouble. There aren't any parasites. It's a really, and we would only use fish from an organic farm where we visited.
Right.
Yeah, otherwise, we use everything as sustainable as possible. We never use sea bass because it's always farmed here. The lamb is fantastic. The lamb is a Connemara Hill lamb. So that's lambs that graze only on the hills. They actually have a different metabolism because of the mountain food that they're eating. The other thing that's weird...
I always thought I should live in a mountain because of increased metabolism.
Yeah, me too, I wish. The other great thing you'll see there, black pig pork fillet, which is stuffed with rhubarb. That's a rare breed pork from Fermanagh, which is up north. And there's a little island and they breed black pig porks, which are fantastic. And we stuff it with rhubarb and serve it with cabbage and gravy and pear sour cream, which is absolutely delicious. You may have to try that.
Well, it is very inventive.
Isn't it?
You may call it classic and routine, but it's and simple, but it's very inventive.
Well, I suppose. I mean, on the plate, you'll often find your classic Irish dinner, which is meat, two vegetables and spuds. But, and gravy, but what we'll do is try and, you know, give it a bit of extra, make the vegetables something delicious and add something to the gravy. We'll often have an apple gravy with our pork. There might be an apple gravy with that one. There is. Mm-hmm. You might need to try that. The other real signature we have is this smoked haddock. It's a hand-smoked haddock from Nicholson's, which is an amazing...
Now, Peter has a weakness for that.
Oh, fantastic, Peter. You have to have that. We poach it in milk, which is a classic Irish way of treating smoked fish. That's really traditional, going back hundreds of years. So poach the smoked haddock in milk and then thicken it with cream and served with a vintage cheddar mash and grilled white onions. It is delicious.
And it's an English dish, too.
It is English, too, yeah.
My mother used to make it. It's called Finnan Haddie.
Finnan, that's right. You should have that for your lunch, Peter. I think
that's what Finnan. I've had Finnan Haddie.
Finnan Haddock, yeah.
Now, when my mother made it, I would say... Well, I know yours will be about 500% better.
Well, your poor mother, hopefully not. In fact, it's funny you say that because in this restaurant, we get a lot of comparisons with mother's cooking and not always favorably for the mothers, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, this is
you hear
it
a lot. our very first day of opening, we had a bacon and cabbage, which is a classic Irish. Boiled bacon and cabbage, you boil the cabbage in the bacon stock. And we had a food reviewer in on our first day, and she said, "Oh my lord, I'm so sorry to say this, but this is way better than my mother's." She was very upset. The other thing you see on the appetizers, the Irish charcuterie board. This is another great example of what I was saying. We have a plate of charcuterie. If I gave it to you without telling you, you would think it was prosciutto and chorizo and bresaola. In actual fact, it's air-dried beef, air-dried lamb, which is made with junipers, and air-dried pork from James McGeough in Galway. And Galway is on the west, the sort of northwest. And he has this amazing charcuterie business, and he has gone to prosciutto to train. So he does his air-dried pork in the style of prosciutto. And on that plate is also then Fingal Ferguson's chorizo. The whole plate is from Ireland. In fact, everything that's on your plate is from Ireland, apart from the lemons. We don't do so great with lemons.
No, I understand.
But it's surprising. We have a fish plate as well, which is from a range of smokehouses across the country.
Well, you shouldn't skip by desserts, though. I mean, even though I don't eat them, a lot of our listeners do.
Well,
and Peter does, too.
Peter is
what
going,
is your iconic dessert here?
The bread and butter pudding has to be said.
Well, that's...
Bread and butter pudding is just fantastic. I will put it down and I will tell people this is completely calorie free and dairy free. And they will say, really? And I will say no. So it's pure butter, cream, sugar and whiskey sauce. Everything that you love in life that you shouldn't have. But Peter would probably be familiar with that. That can be quite an English thing as well. In fact, a lot of our food is quite similar. When it comes to...
My Auntie Margaret used to make bread and butter pudding. It was really good.
Was it good?
It was really good.
Well, I urge you to try this one. The other thing that's fantastic is our sticky pear and ginger cake with Gothabond vanilla ice cream. So that's a sticky pear and ginger, almost like a sticky toffee pudding, but it's got a layer of pears and then caramel over the top, sticky caramelly sauce and organic vanilla ice cream, which is fantastic.
And now you have a, with the bread and butter pudding, you have wonderfully complemented by a glass of San Emilio, Pedro Jimenez.
PX. Oh.
Now, it just reminded me, I'm looking at a lot of bottles here.
Yeah.
Is this room we're in, is it a lounge?
Well, this room is both of the floors. It's hard for your listeners to picture it, but I guess I should describe it. It's a distressed floor room with really simple distressed wooden tables. I got the base of the table from a French cafe in Paris, and I had it cast. Mm. So it's a cast iron base, very simple, unfinished, and then a simple wooden tops and bent wood cafe chairs.
Okay, but you have a full bar of those all wine bottles there.
Yeah, and so then a full bar. Counter with wine racks on the wall, and downstairs we have a full shelves all over the walls, and we have about 300 wines.
Okay.
So again, I mean, those are the touches that make it not a cafe and not a simple canteen, although the food will be very simple and rustic. I wanted a place where people could come and they could order a bottle of wine for $20 and a simple main course, or they could have a bottle of Cristal and a bottle of Gratamaco.
Well, and this is an extraordinary place. And how about a website?
Yeah, so our website is www.winding-stair.com.
Okay.
There's no S on the end of the stair. It's just Winding Stair. And
everyone should come.
Thank you. Yes, we'd love to see you all.
And we must miss you, Buona Viaggio, because I happen to know from our correspondence that you're headed for Sicilia tomorrow.
I am.
And you're going to be visiting some of your suppliers.
Yes.
We will be about 3 weeks behind you in Sicily. So,
a pity we won't meet up.
So we must correspond about where you've been.
Yes. I'm going to some fantastic restaurants, and I'll definitely keep in touch with you. We're visiting our suppliers. We've got a fair amount of Sicilian wines in our list, and as you know, the Sicilian sunshine is like no other. Yeah. And the Sicilian food is like no other because it's got that amazing North African influence. So I'll pass on my top tips to you.
Thank you.
That would be absolutely great. And, of course, there is no Irish wine. It's coming.
I'm sure it will.
I have a red and a white on my list. This is quite incredible. From Lusk, County Dublin. Will I say that it's the best wine you've ever tasted? No, but we don't have the sunshine. But you know what? It's there. So technically, you could come to the Winding Stair and have an entire meal, including your wine and water, from within the island. And I think that's pretty special.
Well, you know, there's a wine shop in London that deals exclusively with English wine.
Yeah.
Let's not have you go off on one of your rants again.
We've
been having such a wonderful time talking to Elaine. I think we should sign off before you.
Okay.
Before you
always time to talk about wine, though. But thanks a million. You're very welcome here. And enjoy your lunch.
Well, we won't be in Dublin next week, but we'll still be in Ireland. So we'll see you again, same time, same place.
Bye-bye.